Now, it's time to go deep for the exclusive info you need on the hockey team you love. This is Preds Insiders with your host, Robbie Stanley, on your flagship home of the Predators Radio Network, Smashville's best sports talk,
ESPN
102.5.
And welcome in to another edition of Preds Insiders here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. As always, I'm your host, Robbie Stanley, and man, have we got a lot to get into today here on the program. Preds Insiders brought to you by Spring Hill Heating and Cooling. What a week it has been for the Predators since the last time we recorded an episode. A whole lot has happened. A lot of moves that have been made, both with the roster and in the front office as well. We're going to get to all of that coming up today here in the show. You'll also hear from Nick Kieser, another edition of Kieser's Corner coming up later in the show as well. So a lot to get to on the program here today. But let's just think about the moves that have been made by the Predators over the course of the past week. Beginning on Saturday, as Nino Niederreiter was traded from the Predators to the Winnipeg Jets in exchange for a 2024 second-round pick, a move made that, to me, signaled the direction that the Predators were leaning. They had won against San Jose two nights previously to that, last Thursday. But on Saturday, made the decision to begin the selling process and sold off Nino Niederreiter to the Jets in exchange for a second-round pick in 2024. And then the following day on Sunday, big moves made by the Predators. Firstly, David Poile announcing his retirement, that he'll be stepping away effective June 30th this offseason, and that Barry Trotz, the first head coach in the history of the Predators franchise, would be taking over as the second general manager in the history of the Predators franchise. So we'll get a little bit more into that as the show goes throughout today. But that was the bombshell move that was announced on Sunday. And then late Sunday night, the Predators decided to trade Tanner Jeannot to the Tampa Bay Lightning in exchange for 5 draft picks and a prospect, slash young defenseman in Cal Foote, who made his debut with the Predators last night against Pittsburgh. So a huge move, sending Tanner Jeannot to Tampa Bay. They paid an extreme price for him, sending 5 draft picks back to the Predators, including a first-round draft pick in 2025 as well. So a big haul for the Predators on the Tanner Jeannot front. You fast forward a couple of days until Tuesday, and the Predators trade Matthias Ekholm to the Edmonton Oilers in exchange for a first-round pick in this year's draft, a prospect in Reed Schaefer, who was a first-round pick in last year's draft, a 4th-round pick in the 2024 draft, and defenseman Tyson Barrie coming back the other way from Edmonton as well. Preds also sending a 6th-round pick to Edmonton along with Matthias Ekholm. So some massive moves made by the Predators this week that have really changed the course of the franchise. And that is both in the front office with Barry Trotz scheduled to take over as general manager. There was a nice press conference on Monday celebrating the retirement of David Poile and the career of David Poile that he's had to this point. And then obviously introducing Barry Trotz as the next general manager of the Predators. And it's amazing how the narrative of a team can change in a relatively short period of time. A lot of you have been calling for this to happen. A lot of us in the media have been calling for this to happen. I said a couple of weeks ago, it's time. It's time for the Predators to sell. It's time for them to embrace where they are and try to do something about it as they move forward here. And the Predators, to their credit, have done that, and they've started to do it. And the week's not over. The trade deadline's coming up on Friday. We'll see if there are more moves made by the Predators coming down the pipe here or whether or not they're done. But what a week so far for the Nashville Predators. And as of Wednesday morning, as this is being recorded, you think about the capital that they've gained to this point. And we were talking about that this morning on Robbie and Rex Road. They have 5 first-round draft picks in the next 3 years. They have 5 second-round draft picks in the next 3 years and 5 third-round draft picks in the next 3 years. So in the next 3 years, in the top 3 rounds, you're talking about 15 draft choices that the Predators currently have at their disposal. And that creates a lot of options. Look, we still can talk about the Ryan Johansson contract and the Matt Duchene contract and Mikael Granlund, whoever else you want to start talking about that can maybe limit where you can go. I mean, Philip Forsberg's making a lot of money. Roman Josi's making a lot of money. We know all those things. But the Predators have created, by the moves that they've made and the actions that they've taken, a little bit of room for themselves from a salary cap standpoint, number one. But number two, I think they've created some flexibility in what they can do as they move forward. So obviously you've got the draft capital. You can use those draft picks, and they're going to use some of them at least for sure. But you can also parlay some of those picks into getting some better assets for your team, making some trades, you know, moving up in the draft if you want to. Like, there's a lot of different routes that this could go now, and the Predators have created a lot of options for themselves where at this time a week ago, there just weren't a whole lot of options to be created, right? I mean, they were stuck in the mud, and they were a team that, you know, we've talked about ad nauseum, a team that everybody, I shouldn't say everybody, but a lot of Predators fans were fed up with the same sort of thing every year of they're pretty good in the regular season, but not quite good enough to be a higher seed in the playoffs. They kind of squeak their way in the playoffs, and then all of a sudden they're one and done in the first round, whether that be six games against Carolina, six games against Dallas a couple of years ago, the play-in bubble series against Arizona, or getting swept last year against Colorado. It's been the same story for a long time around here. And the Predators, I think to their credit, have decided that they want to change that and maybe take a step back in order to hopefully take some steps forward in the future. And look, it's something that I've called on them to do, and I think they should be commended for following through. Now, how deep is this teardown going to go? I don't know. They've made some big moves already this week. Could that continue for the rest of this week or into the offseason? I think it's a fair question. I mean, Barry Trotz has taken over as general manager on July 1st. He's going to be around the building. David Poile told us on Robbie and Rex Road on Tuesday morning that he's about to go on this road trip with the team. He'll be in Milwaukee soon. Got a meeting with the staff up there. He's going to go on some scouting trips and get ready for the draft that way. So Barry Trotz is about to be, you know, knee deep into this and to be fully invested and, in his words, own it, as he talked about earlier this week at the press conference. So I don't know exactly what his approach is going to be. I don't know exactly how big of a teardown they have in mind, but they have definitely started the process of selling, and the team is different. You can tell that, you know, this has sent shockwaves through that locker room, and I'm really interested to see how the Predators respond from here, both on the ice this year, with, of course, you know, decisions that they've got to make with some younger guys and what that the future of that's going to look like, but also the head coaching part of this, right? Anytime you make a change at general manager and you've got a new regime coming in, a lot of times that also spells the end of the coaching staff. And, you know, Barry Trotz talked about the status of John Hines earlier this week and basically said that it would be unfair for him to comment on his status right now and to make an evaluation based on that he's not really been around him all that much and has not been in this position so far. I think that Barry Trotz is going to be paying very close attention to John Hines and his staff and the way that they operate as they move forward here over the next few weeks. So, you know, if I had to put some money on it, my guess is that the Predators would move in a different direction at the head coaching spot this offseason. But I don't think that's a guarantee. I think that Barry Trotz will be open to John Hines. I think that he will give him every chance to have a fair evaluation of where he is, the job that he's doing, and whether or not Barry Trotz thinks they'd be better served going in a different direction. So I'm really interested to see how that part of it plays out this week as well. This has been the most, I guess, change-filled week in the history of the Predators franchise, be that from Poile to Trotz to some of the on-ice decisions that they made. I mean, this is the first time that they've truly sold in 9 years. I mean, they've been on a nice run, 8-year run here of making the playoffs, and the last time they sold to this degree especially was around, you know, 9 years ago when they sold, you know, David Legwin and Cal Yarncroke came in. The year before that, Philip Forsberg came in and the Martin Erat deal. So it's been a while since the Predators have chosen to go down this path. And I like what they've done to this point, and we'll see what that means as they move forward. But there's no question this has been a game-changing week for the Nashville Predators, and we'll see what happens from that standpoint. We're going to get specifically into the Matthias Ekholm deal coming up next, a big one yesterday that is probably the biggest deal they've made to this point based purely on the caliber of the player that they moved on their roster. We'll get into the Ekholm deal coming up next. You're listening to Preds Insiders here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. We discussed the Matthias Ekholm trade this morning on Robbie and Rex Road. Here was that conversation.
Joe, the story of the afternoon yesterday, Matthias Ekholm traded from the Nashville Predators to the Edmonton Oilers yesterday. So this is a trade and, quite frankly, a destination that you and I have talked about a lot over the course of the past few days. And we saw the tires being kicked around a couple of days ago. And Darren Dreger was reporting, Pierre LeBrun was reporting that conversations were taking place back and forth between the Predators and the Oilers. And yesterday, David Poile pulls the trigger and Matthias Ekholm and a sixth-round pick sent to the Edmonton Oilers in exchange for Tyson Barrie, Reed Schaefer, who was a first-round pick a year ago, a first-round pick in this year's draft, and a fourth-round pick in 2024 as well. So Matthias Ekholm added to the list of Nashville Predators that is now on the move. And, Joe, that was one of the bigger moves, maybe the biggest move that we thought they could make by the time the deadline rolls around, and the Predators made it yesterday. Matthias Ekholm, who spent his entire career here in Nashville, is now on the move and is joining Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl, and the Edmonton Oilers.
I mean, didn't Poile just tell us, like, 2 hours earlier, like, don't hold your breath?
I think he did.
I tweeted something about Poile, you know, dropping the mic or something, and then someone tweeted, well, maybe this one was Trotz. Okay, that's true.
There we go.
It's yeah. All the bad things that happened, Poile. All the good things that happened, Trotz. No, it's a big deal. It's a huge deal. And, man, you look at the whole picture of everything. And, you know, also now bringing in two veteran defensemen. I mean, I think Fabro is probably just – academic at this point, right? It's a matter of when and who, and
well,
right?
I would think so. I'm interested to see. I mean, you get Tyson Barrie back as a part of this deal, and we threw out a different package yesterday, Joe, that Tyson Barrie was also included in.
Yep.
I'm interested to see if they can flip him, because I don't know that, you know, Tyson Barrie's a good player. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know that the Predators would have some overwhelming desire to keep him around next year. So I'm interested to see whether or not they can flip him. Now, that doesn't necessarily have to happen now. You can try to do that over the summer. But to your point, like, you know, Cal Foote was back in there last night with Ekholm out. You know, Fabro played up top with Josi last night, and they had Cal Foote in the lineup. I think it's just a matter of time at this point before Dante Fabro is moved out as well. I don't know for sure that that's going to be by Friday. I would not be surprised at all if it is by Friday, but yes, you've got two veteran defensemen. Well, one veteran defenseman in Barrie and one younger guy that you're intrigued by in Foote coming in the lineup to see what they do moving forward here.
That's an interesting question, because Barrie certainly has some offensive game that, you know, that obviously the Preds have had a lot of defensemen, you know, over the years who have provided some offense. They haven't, like, other than Josi, it's kind of been – it hasn't been as balanced that way, right, in the last couple of years. So, it's an interesting question of whether they consider – because Barrie has 1 year left in his deal, right?
Yeah.
I think so, yeah. Interesting, like, if they consider him possibly a long-term thing, or like you said, it's just you quickly flip him and basically Josi and youth – well, McDonough and youth.
Yeah.
Is McDonough going next?
I don't know. We're running out of trades, right? Like Friday has a chance to be the most boring trade deadline day of all time, because they've all happened already, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure, like, things are going to happen on Friday, but, like, most of the big deals to this point have already taken place. Like, Patrick Kane got traded yesterday. I mean, there's not a whole lot that's left for deadline day coming up on Friday.
That's true. Gosh. I mean, I guess it's like, well, whenever you can get the deal done, get the deal done. But I feel like, you know, like the NBA, for example, brings it right up to the deadline.
For sure. And on the Ekholm front of this, I mean, it's not surprising that he got moved.
But it is, like, I mean, we've been talking about Ekholm being traded for a couple of years. Now, that died down last year, obviously, after he had signed the deal and the Predators were in a better spot in the standings. But 2 years ago, you know, leading up to the Predators turning things around, Ekholm, I mean, we talked about it a lot. And now we've talked about it over the course of the past couple of weeks here of what a package for Ekholm could look like. So I'm not surprised that he's been traded. But once they actually pulled the trigger and did it, it's like, wow, they just traded Matthias Ekholm. And he's a guy that's been around for a long time. And, I mean, you could see it on some of the videos that came out of the locker room last night, like Roman Josi's face talking about Matthias Ekholm being traded. I mean, it's a big deal in that locker room. And he's a guy that, Joe, as you know, I mean, he's right near the top of the list in terms of the go-to spokesman for this team when things are going well and when things are going poorly. So it's a big loss inside that locker room, both on the ice and with the leadership group as well. And it just kind of shows you where David Poile thinks this team is right now when you're making big moves like that. And, oh, by the way, that's another first-round pick gain this year when the draft's in Nashville, and they have picked up 8 draft picks in the last 5 days.
Yeah, I mean, look, we talked about it yesterday. Okay, what if it was just a first and it was like, oh, man, it's really tough. I think the totality of what was offered here, I don't see how you turn it down, you know, with Ekholm, where he is in his career, and then just where you are, you know? I mean, to me, it's just, I don't know, as we talked about yesterday, who knows? They could also parlay some of this stuff into all of a sudden, you know, a player who changes their trajectory instantly. But right now, it looks like, you know, you'd be paying – 2 defensemen, more than $6 million AAV for multiple years with teams that aren't necessarily going to be very competitive.
Yeah, exactly.
That's why I think you had to do this.
Well, I mean, it's another first-round pick. It's a prospect in return that is a first-round pick from a year ago. Now, albeit, you know, it was 32nd overall a year ago, but a prospect from a year ago that's a first-round pick that is 6'3" and 215 pounds at the age of 19 that's got – over a point per game this year in the Western Hockey League. Now, there are conflicting opinions on what exactly he's going to be as they move forward. I'm talking about Reed Schaefer, who's the prospect they got back in the trade yesterday. You know, he's 19. We'll see what that ends up looking like for the Predators. But you're talking about a first-round pick, a player in Tyson Barrie that, who knows, maybe you'll be able to flip at some point and get other assets from, and then a prospect in Reed Schaefer that, you know, we'll see what he turns into. You like the size. You like the offensive ability that he's shown to this point. We'll see what he turns into as the Predators try to continue to develop him. It's just they've flipped the picture around in terms of the assets that they bring to the table. And even if they just decide to draft all these guys and they don't use any of them to make trades, I mean, you're talking about way more kicks at the can inside the top 3 rounds over the next 3 years that you have to feel like give yourselves a better chance to hit on somebody that could come in and be a game-changing player for you and your franchise.
Yeah, so I appreciated Nick Kieser, you know, tweeting it all together. So the total is first round this year, first round in 25, 2 seconds in 24, a third this year, 2 fourths this year, and a fifth this year. For one thing, of course, the draft is here.
Yeah.
So the Preds in their home draft are going to be all over the thing, you know, which is fun. But I mean, like you said, I mean, however it goes, these could be used as you, I like the term weaponized. These could be weaponized. These could be parlayed into something else. Or yeah, you there's a margin for error. You're going to have some misses. Everybody has misses. You have this many shots at it and you just have a higher possibility of getting some really impactful players.
Well, and right now, I mean, you're talking about they've created $11 million of cap space for now for this cap hit at the deadline coming up, which, you know, it's important. You can take on some other deals and maybe some contracts if you need to moving forward here to get some return back. But also, you know, with Ekholm gone now, with Niederreiter gone now, you know, Janot a little bit less so just based on the money. But the cap space that they've got heading into next year is significant. And they're going to use some of that on restricted free agents. Carrier needs a new contract. You've got some other restricted free agents that you're going to have to identify, but they've got cap space and freedom in that way moving forward as well. So, I mean, look, just personally speaking, it's tough to see Matias Ekholm go. I mean, we've talked about how much we enjoy talking to Matias Ekholm here, but the Predators pretty clearly felt like enough was enough, and they had to make some significant changes to their roster. And, you know, a lot of fans have been clamoring for them to do this for a long time, and this week they fully bought in on doing it. I mean, they're in complete sell mode right now. And, you know, I questioned whether or not they would do it, but now they have, and I'm looking at it right now. In the next 3 years, they have 5 first-round draft picks, they have 5 second-round draft picks, and they have 5 third-round draft picks. You're talking about 15 picks within the first 3 rounds of the next 3 drafts. That's a heck of a lot of draft capital you've got now. Coming up next, you'll hear a conversation with new Nashville Predators general manager Barry Trotz. This is Preds Insiders here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Preds Insiders here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game, brought to you by Spring Hill Heating and Cooling. Chase McCabe and Willie Donnett caught up with new Predators general manager Barry Trotz earlier this week. Here was that conversation with Barry Trotz.
The first ever head coach in Predators history, now the second ever general manager in Predators history. Barry Trotz joins us now. And Barry, I was, you know, Willie and I were just talking when you were here as the coach. I was starting my career as a broadcaster, but you and I met at a Franklin Road Academy soccer game when I was about 15 years old. Your daughter Shallon was playing, and I'm sitting up in the stands. You sat down next to me, and that's the first time I met Barry Trotz. And, well, and it was awesome.
Well, good, good. I sometimes feel like I'm really awesome, so I'm glad you thought of me that way. So that's very kind.
Yeah. Did he yell at the refs or anything? Was he well behaved as a parent?
No, he was very quiet.
Okay, I'm always quiet. I
set the example for the parents.
I got total respect for referees and that. I don't go there. Yeah, but yeah. Shallon, my daughter Shallon was here today with my granddaughter, and she was a good little soccer player. She could run.
Yeah, no doubt. So what's this like for you? First head coach in team history, and now get to be the GM, get to work with David for a little bit more, and then you'll take the reins July 1st.
It's surreal. When I got the job in Nashville in 97, I was, you know, it felt real, but it didn't feel real. I have that same feeling, but with the same love. It's so great because I look around and I'm going to be working with people that I've known. I have relationships. I look at with staff members, all that. It is the best thing that I could ever wish for in this position, and to be coming back to a place that I love, not only the team but the city, and this was home. And it always has been home. And for me to replace David, people have no idea how much that means to me, because a lot of things that I have had the opportunity to do and have some success at, I attribute to the mentorship of David Poile and the opportunities he's provided me in the in my early years. And we were laughing there. I mean, the stories. I mean, I remember seeing David, who he didn't know me from Adam. I was in Hershey, Pennsylvania. I was a walk-on, not a very good hockey player, but as I said. And I saw him and Jack Button. I knew Jack Button, who was his right-hand man at the time. And I went up to the stands. He was sitting there, and this was David's first year, and I go there and I, excuse me, and Mr. Button, and I didn't know David, and I said, I'm Barry Trotz, and Jack Button, who was a growly old guy, he said, I know who you are. I'm the one that invited you, and I said, well, I just want to thank you. And he says, listen, kid, you know, the only reason that you're here is that you might be a good minor league leader someday or a coach. Well, I'm 20 years old.
Still had the dream.
I had the dream. I had the dream. I thought I was going to play for the Washington Capitals. And, And lo and behold, I'm so thankful that he said that to me. You know, so when I got an opportunity, I went back and I finished my final year of junior, and then I got into coaching. And I coached at I was a coach and general manager at I guess I was 21 or 22 in my hometown of Dauphin, Manitoba. And usually they call the local kid back because the local team is deeply in debt and can't pay a real coach. And and so I go back and learn the trade. And I had good success in the Manitoba Junior League. And so much so that I went to the University of Manitoba for a year when Wayne Fleming was because I had played for Wayne for a year. No, I was 22 when I went to Dauphin. So I had played for Wayne for a year and my back had given out on me. And I went back and I was a general manager. I did all the recruiting. I did all that stuff, budgets, all those things that you did back in tier two. And then I went to the University of Manitoba and the players are older than me. And being a head coach and doing that and the management stuff that you have to do as a university, dealing with administrations and stuff like that. And then I was going to go, during that year when I was at Manitoba, Jack Button reached out to me and said, Barry, we're looking for an area scout just for Manitoba. And I was doing that anyways. I was doing that every night. I was going out and watching the Tier 2 League for recruits, for the University of Manitoba. I'd go to Brandon and see the Western Hockey League. I was trying to find players that would, come to the University of Manitoba and play. And he phoned me and said, I'd like you to do some part-time scouting. And I started doing that, and they liked what I was doing. And then Brian Murray, who was my coach in junior, who is now the head coach of the Washington Capitals, phoned me and says, I wonder if you could do some pre-scouting. So I started doing that, and one thing led to another. And then at the end of the year, they invited me to the draft, and I was going to go sign up as the assistant GM and assistant coach with the Moose Jaw Warriors. I got asked by Jack Button again. We have a scout that is thinking about retiring. Would you consider being a Western scout and covered in Western Canada and in the United States? And from that point, I said, I'll think about it. And then the smartest person that for me has been my wife. She's always led me the right way. She says, you like coaching and you can do that, but this seems like something that you might have some interest in. Why don't you do it? And if you could always go back coaching. So I came on as the Western scout for the Washington Capitals, moved to Regina. And then the next year, Jack called me and said, we want to make you the head Western scout. And they moved me out to Vancouver. And my first draft, we got two. Our first two picks came out of Western Canada. The first one was Olaf Kolzik in the first round and Byron Defoe in the second round. And they ended up having really good careers. So the one thing led to another. And then I thought we were about to buy a house and move to Vancouver. I said, this must be my calling, And lo and behold, Brian was really good. Brian Murray would really involve me. He didn't know if I wanted to coach or be a scout yet, so he involved me in a lot of coaching stuff. So at the end of the that year, we're about to buy a house. My wife says, maybe just phone Jack. He might want to, in case we have to move again. And I said, no, he just made me Western scout. I moved us out here. We've already moved, twice in 2 years. So he's not going to move me again. And lo and behold, he says, well, the draft is upcoming in Vancouver. I was going to talk to you next week. So we had to hold on the house, and I ended up going to Baltimore as an assistant coach. And then I became head coach in Baltimore, did some pre-scouts, did some scouting, all that, and then moved up to Portland, was the head coach there. And then I started signing the minor league players, but the depth players with the agents, and they give me a budget, and started doing that. We won championships up there. And then I got the opportunity in Nashville. And that first year, as I said, in Nashville, where, you know, we were picking out carpet. We were, you know, doing all that stuff.
This place wasn't even done yet.
Yeah, Sean Henry gave you credit for picking out the carpet
Well, one of the best statements is we couldn't decide on the color. And Paul Gardner, who had a good sense of humor, actually it was David, who has a sneaky good humor. I said, you know, we're picking out, which one do you like better? He goes, really, does it matter? You're not going to be here when it's worn out. You're not going to be here probably when it's worn out. And lo and behold, I fooled him. I stayed for a while.
Yeah. It's so natural to have you back in the fold. I mean, you're just jumping right back in here, and it is, you know, so seamless. But I think a lot of people would be curious, you know, how valuable the things you picked up along the way when, as you move through Washington, you win a championship, you know, you lifted up the Islanders organization that hadn't had a lot of success over a long period of time. But how valuable as you bring that stuff back here?
Oh, tremendously. You know, because I was used to, you know, how David did things.
Yeah.
I can say without a doubt, and it's no disrespect to any other. Other teams do things differently. Every organization does things differently. This is a very well-tuned organization. It's incredible. But there are some things that other teams do that you go, you know what, that's not a bad idea. Mm-hmm. Or this, you know, and you ask the reasons why they did it that way. Because that's one thing I've always done is, okay, tell me, you know, I always use the term, I've got a new dance partner. So I want to learn the steps.
Yeah.
And so I would ask those questions, and they would give me some very thorough answers of why they believe that way works for them. It might not work here.
Yeah.
But what it does is just give you more information, more ways that you say, you know what, this market, this organization, every organization keeps evolving, and a lot of that knowledge becomes very, very, very valuable and useful as you go forward. It might be a way to merge areas of your organization that, not disconnected, but even connect them more, just with a little tweak here or there. So I think those experiences that, that I've had are going to be invaluable, and they also allow me to ask questions that I probably wouldn't have asked before, which so that it just tells me it's a different way of thinking.
How similar and how different are, say, David Poile and Lou Lamoriello, a guy that you work with a lot of time? Because those guys have shown a long, long track record of success. They have different viewpoints. Are they more similar than we might believe, or are they completely different?
They're more similar in the areas that are really important to anybody. They are people. I mean, they if you work for them, they take care of you in terms of anything that you need in terms of, and it doesn't have to be hockey related. If you got in a little, you know, had some difficulty away from the ice or anything, they are the first guys that you're going to call and the first guys that would really take care of you. And that element of that, they are so similar. And
that goes a long way.
And you hear stories about, the way Lou runs his thing. And the way he runs it is different from David. But at the same time, they're so similar as people. It's they really are, and it's just the way they do business, if you will, are different. But the people part, and that's probably why they both have had massive success in this business, because they're sort of like, if you work for them, you know they've got your back all the time, and that is not, you know, and I've got a lot of friends in this business. That's not how it's. That's not usually the way it is. I'm all about team. Willie, you know that from day one. You can get accomplished a lot as a group. And I use this saying, and this is I've had a lot of Mitch Cornisms and but one of mine is that if you want to go. You want to go fast, go by yourself. If you want to go far, go with a group. And I always believe that the strength is in a group. And I've, and it shows in the teams that I've had. even with the championship team that we had in Washington, there was a lot of talent. There are a lot of good individuals, but until we became a really good team, we weren't going to win anything. But it is a process. When I went there, I said, if this group, we keep this group together and we add a couple pieces, I thought we could win a cup in 4 years, and lo and behold, we did. And we won two President's Trophies, but I actually thought that first year was building culture, and we did. Year two was we won the President's Trophy, and we started really believing in that culture. Year three, I thought we had the best team. We did. But we weren't ready mentally to go to that ugly place that you have to go, that you don't think you can go, to win a championship. And we were just off a bit. And losing that year, we needed time to heal. Like, that hurt. And I said we were going to win after that. I just knew we were going to win. Even though we had to move some very good pieces. You think about Justin Williams. There's a serial winner. We had to move on, but his impact on our team the 2 years that we had him was lasting. So when I'm looking for, say a trade, I can look out at all the analytics, but do you bring the intangible? And I look at a guy like Ryan McDonough's taken a couple cups away from me, because we, as in the Islanders, we were battling them hard, and they were a great team. They really are. They got the great DNA, and he was a huge part of it. But a guy like Ryan McDonough is a serial winner. When times get tough, Ryan McDonough will be at the front of the line. An analytics guy might not be. And I say that with all due respect. There's what Ryan McDonough brings. There is not an analytic in the world that can measure it. So I keep going back to him because he's a serial winner. He's won everywhere he's gone, and it probably pains him more than anything than when they don't. And those type of things are very valuable to me because that I've learned that over time. It's the journey. Sometimes you get focused on the cup and the parade and all that, and you never get there because you don't stay with the process. Yeah. I'm not disrespectful for analytics or anything like that. I just, there's not an analytic for it, so I that's the only way I can describe it. But winning's hard in this league. It really is. And what David's done with being in the playoffs as many times with the franchise, it's crazy. Hmm. Our next game, you look at the Penguins, they've won a lot of, they won some cups, and they're in the fight for their life to get in this year.
Yep.
And you're led by, a couple of the top 100 players that have ever played this game in Crosby and Malkin, and they're still great players. It's so hard to win in this league, and so, it's like I'm in coaching. I've been in a long time. If you said, you just got in the playoffs. It's actually quite disrespectful because you don't know how hard it is and how demanding it is. There's some teams that are so talented that are going to make it. It's maybe not as hard, but for the rest of this, there's like three of those teams and the other 29 or so, teams in the league, 28 teams, they're just, they're grinding every day and I have no idea how hard it is.
Coming up next, it's time for another edition of Keezer's Corner with Nick Keezer here on Preds Insiders 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Preds Insiders 102.5, 106.3, The Game, and it's time for another edition of Keezer's Corner with Nick Keezer. Nick, take it away.
And indeed, it is that time, Robbie, for another edition of Keezer's Corner. Welcome in. My name is Nick Keezer, and I've got a few minutes here with you this evening, and I want to just go ahead and dive right in. So, Robbie, I know that you've already touched on all the trades that the Nashville Predators have made here in the last week or so. Obviously, most recently, the Predators traded away Matthias Ekholm. And I know as well, we got rid of Nino Niederreiter, and we also moved off of Tanner Janot. But I want to go back here for a second, and I kind of just want to talk about Matthias Ekholm. Because Matthias Ekholm was a guy that I always just clamored to see growing up here in Nashville. He was someone that took over the reins of running the warmups during the pregame, and he was just an awesome threat to have there on your back end if you're the Nashville Predators. He was an all-around great defenseman. He was always able to drive the puck up the wall. He was physical. He stood up for his teammates. He was just an all-around great guy to have on your hockey team, and David Poile hit with that guy when he took him in the draft. So if you just want to take a look at one player, Matthias, out of all three of these guys, was obviously the pinnacle trade of this week. So Matthias is someone that the Oilers are going to use in a role where they're going to make a huge push for the Stanley Cup. All the more power to Matthias and what he's going to be able to do with the Oilers. They are right in a playoff spot, so I couldn't be happier for him because he's ultimately going to have a better chance than he probably ever had when he was here in Nashville, other than that 2017 season when the Preds went all the way to the Stanley Cup final. And last night was that reunion of the 2017 final between the Preds and the Penguins. The Preds fell 3-1, in case you missed that. But I want to go ahead and dive more into the future of this team. What will it look like? Because now we know, for the first time maybe ever in franchise history, the Nashville Predators have decided to hard sell off here at the trade deadline. And we're not even at the deadline. Friday is the deadline at 2 p.m. Central Time, and the Preds have already decided what they're going to be for the rest of the year. So with that being said, the first thing on the table is the fact that Barry Trotz is here as the next general manager for the Nashville Predators. David Poile had his press conference on Monday introducing Barry, and I couldn't be more happier about the choice. So we bring back the first ever coach of the franchise in Barry Trotz. He has no executive experience whatsoever. However, he does have that perspective of being one of the greatest coaches in NHL history. So he's won a Stanley Cup. He left Nashville. He's been with two other organizations as a head coach. He's been with the Washington Capitals and the New York Islanders with Lou Lamoriello at the helm there as GM. And now he's back here in Nashville. Like he told everybody, he said, "I'm home. Nashville is home." So we're glad to have him back. Barry, welcome. And we can't wait to talk to you more here over the airwaves over these next few seasons and see what you can do. But what is going on right now? And David Poile joined Robbie and Rex Road on Tuesday earlier this week. And he obviously threw out that, you know, we're making this transition. Barry's coming in. Here's what the process was like. He also very subtly threw out that somebody was making their NHL debut. And that player just so happened to be Luke Evangelista. So he got his opportunity for the first time in the NHL. And I knew right when I heard that, that I wanted to get as much info as I could, being reporter Nick Kieser apparently. So I wanted to find out as much as I could, naturally, right? Obviously. He is a highly touted prospect. He had 111 points in his final season in juniors before he ended up going to play with the Chicago Wolves. And then he has been with the Milwaukee Admirals this year. He has 41 points. He is tied for second among rookies in the AHL. So glad to see his face up here in the NHL. He's going to be wearing number 77 in case you want to know where to find him on the ice. And so with all of this being said, I reached out to our friend up in Milwaukee, Aaron Sims, who calls games for the Admirals. And he and I just had a powwow. We discussed, you know, the upcoming prospects, but he really shed some light on Luke Evangelista. And I just want to play a little bit of this audio because Aaron had a lot to say, but more specifically, this is what he had to say about Luke Evangelista this year at the NHL level.
When he gets out there, I think you're going to see a guy that that knows how to make some plays, but I think he's probably going to play it as simple as possible and not get hurt, mm-hmm. not put himself into a bad spot. But I'd be curious to see if he does play a normal shift, a regular shift. There's not penalty troubles. Coach doesn't shorten the bench, all of this stuff. I'll be curious to see as the game goes on how he has adjusted to the speed and how his confidence has adjusted to the speed, because you could see him try to make a move on it, you know, like that. What's getting him to the next level is he's got great hands, right? So that's going to get him to the next level. His brain is going to get him to the next level.
And there you have it. Aaron chimed in on Luke Evangelista. And honestly, that's exactly what he did against the Penguins. And he went up against guys like Sid the Kid, Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, and I'll touch on a play that he had against him. And he balled out, honestly. In his debut, he had 14 minutes on the ice. You know, he didn't score. He didn't get a goal nor an assist. So what was he able to do? Well, I'll tell you. So he had two shots on net. Both chances were prime scoring opportunities. And the second shot that he had made it over to Tristan Jarry. And then Evgeny Malkin found his way, but more or less, it was Evangelista who found him in the midst of a hit. So he was able to finish his check against Malkin, and Malkin, you know, was completely dumbfounded by the entire play. But ultimately, Evangelista had a great debut. That was one thing that stood out to me about that debut. And I know that we'll dive more into this next week. But the one thing I am looking forward to, just to give our listeners something to just clamor about here in this next week, if you are interested in our prospects in the Nashville Predators system, Igor Afanasyev, what's he been like this past year in the AHL and this season? I'm looking forward to sharing more of that here with you. Thanks for listening to another edition of Keezer's Corner.
All right, Nick, that's going to do it for us today here on Preds Insiders. We'll be back next week. You're listening to 102.5, 106.3, The Game.